Welcome back to The Bottom Line on KCPW. Today on the Startup Spotlight, we're talking with Mark Pittman, founder of a company called Blinksy. If you've ever been frustrated during your commute because the traffic lights are not coordinated, or if you've ever been stuck at a traffic light in front of an empty intersection, you're going to love Blinksy's business. They make it easy for municipalities to minimize congestion by conducting complex traffic studies literally every second of every day. Blinksy uses this information to help municipalities optimize their traffic light infrastructure. And it means shorter commute times and less being stuck in traffic for us. It turns out that Utah, and Salt Lake City in particular, have one of the most advanced traffic systems in the nation. Despite that, until Blinksy, coordination of the traffic lights was based on traffic studies that were mostly done months, if not years ago, and coordinated by employees literally looking at cameras and manually making adjustments. Blinksy brings traffic management into the 21st century. While still very much an early stage company, their initial customer list is impressive and includes the University of Utah and Park City. Mark Pittman of Blinksy, thank you for joining us on The Bottom Line.
Thanks for having me.
So, I gave a little bit of an intro of what Blinksy does, but give us a little more background. What's the mission of Blinksy?
Yeah, so we see Blinksy as a big data analytics company. Less of physical hardware and traffic engineering, and more of how do we use software and new computing technologies to make cities and local communities a better place. That's really the mission that we have, is to improve the lives of almost everyone through new technologies, and that's really what we've done.
And that's a huge mission, but let's start with where's Blinksy today? What can you help municipalities and firms do?
Yeah, I mean, so our most specific examples and some of the work we're actually doing now is helping cities understand economic development drives that affect transit. For example, you head to an event in a city, how often do you come back to that city after that? Do you go shopping there? Do you go to restaurants? Does the city need to have more parking or less parking? And how does that parking need to be optimized to get people there, to drive tax revenue for the city, also make the businesses as successful as they can possibly be? So we work on both ends of the equation, work both with the businesses who buy the data from us to have more insight into their customers and understand what's actually going on, as well as the cities who are looking to drive more and more traffic in and around their local communities to drive tax revenue and help those cities grow and expand.
Okay. And just to add a little more color, I mentioned in the opening, the University of Utah is a customer, as is Park City. Let's talk about both of them and how they're using Blinksy, because I think it will help illustrate and give a little more color to what you guys are doing. So let's start with the University of Utah. Why did they deploy Blinksy?
Yeah, so the University of Utah was our first partner in this entire system when we started the company. They seemed like the most logical fit for a host of reasons. As a member of the Pac-12 now and as a growing university, they have a lot at stake in who comes to the university, how long they stay there when they come back. Any of the metrics and information that help them optimize things like class schedules or how students get up to the university on the tracks line or commuting, anything like that. So our first study really centered around how many people are actually coming to the University of Utah Stadium parking lot? When are they coming back? How long are they staying? Any of that kind of information that was overlaid then with football games and other event data to understand what kind of impact the campus and the local community was seeing as a result of that.
Okay, let me pause you there before we go to Park City. How do you do this?
So it's pretty simple. We put a box up on an intersection, on a streetlight, on a power pole, you name it. And as electronic devices come within about 200 feet of that box, our Blinks beacon, as we call them, we anonymously scan for the signals coming from those devices. We pick up a unique identifier that we anonymize, randomize, and encrypt so that we can literally understand when that device came by a certain location and when it goes by other locations.
And even though it's been anonymized, can you still tell, okay, there was a device that was at the University of Utah football game, and then later that day it went to the theater district?
Exactly. We can do all of that without any connection to personal information or privacy violations because we removed any kind of identifying information from that identifier.
And it's kind of a growing area of the law. Are laws in place now that govern and give you kind of a safe harbor, here's what you can do and here's how you do it, or are you kind of in an area that has yet to be developed?
We're in a new and growing space. We're very proactive on this front. The regulatory bodies like the FCC and the FTC who work in this space, even state laws, So we work in conjunction with all of those in this space now. There are some laws in place, others developing now. The European Union has different ideas of how this looks. So we're on the very cutting edge in the sense that we self-govern very, very aggressively in what we expect to be the new regulatory landscape to make sure that customer data is as secure as possible.
And you have a good background for this from the legal standpoint. I mean, you're a young man. You went to the University of Utah, just graduated this past spring, so 3-4 months ago, both through the MBA program as well as the law program. So you have the foundation for how to think about these legal issues. And I've been in meetings with you where investors have said, hey, you should do this with the data and you should do that with the data. And I've been impressed with how you've said no. Because of the concern, you could legally do it today, but you think that it's very quickly coming, the period of time where you could not do that. What's that vision based on?
So Blinksy isn't so far concerned with what is legal now that we could potentially do. We are good stewards of the data. We think we have a mission and a duty both to the community and to the world at large that we feel is heavily impacted by the laws and regulatory landscape. We work aggressively on lobbying fronts and even with our lawyers to understand what the law is going to be like and where it's going. But we don't really, our business is not derived from what we could do maliciously or what we feel would be maybe in bad faith to make money. It's how do we do this to make the world a better place in the most responsible and effective ways.
I'm really glad to hear you say that. I think from a business standpoint, it's going to lead to your long-term success, right? There's shortcuts out there, but ultimately, I think they're going to backfire on people that do that. I mentioned you went to the University of Utah. We've had Taylor Randall, the dean of the business school, on as a guest. We're hoping to have Troy D'Ambrosio on as a guest sometime soon as well, who heads the he's the executive director of the Lausanne Entrepreneurial Institute there. How did your education at the U prepare you for what you're doing now?
I could have never wished for a more phenomenal education than the one I received at the University of Utah. Both Taylor Randall and Troy D'Ambrosio have been phenomenal mentors and advisors to me, as well as professors and teachers. And they've really helped me understand the complexity that is business. The University of Utah's focus is not just on maximizing profit now. It's about growing a more holistic approach to business, right? And it's almost a triple bottom line approach, as the saying goes, to being both a good corporate citizen and steward and growing business in conjunction with the community to do that all responsibly, ethically, and effectively.
Yeah, I know the ethics side of it. When we had Taylor on, you know, I asked him an open-ended question, what's some initiatives at the U that people may not have heard of? And I believe that's the example he brought up, was just the importance of business ethics. If you're just joining us, our guest this morning is startup entrepreneur Mark Pittman, who is the founder of Blinksy. So I mentioned earlier investors, and I should disclose, I believe I'm your first investor in your company. I'm an angel investor through the Park City Angels. What was that process like? So when you had the idea for Blinksy, and you have two things. One, you've got to develop the product, and two, you have to raise money. Let's start with the raising the money. What was that process like? And I should share with everybody, you are here with a glow on your face. Just last night, you closed on a $400,000 round. That came together fairly easily, a lot of interest, but it wasn't always that easy for you.
Yeah. And so the hardest job that a startup CEO has, I think, is the balance between raising money that you need to grow the company and actually growing the company, right? Meeting with customers, talking to your team, solving the hard issues. And raising money in Utah is an interesting experience.
It's challenging, for sure.
We're very focused on a couple key metrics, right? We're a very conservative state by nature, and that goes through to our business. And that's a great thing. It just makes it very difficult at the early stages. Most investors look for tried and true products that they can invest in and have the most secure return possible. And at the early stages, that's not exactly the case, right? We funded the company on my credit card for a long time and off my student loans. And that's how we really got it to grow, with some grant funding that we received to the Lausanne Entrepreneurship Program and some other endeavors, and then eventually raising money through angels. So the approach is tried and true, I guess, now. You have to just stick with it, right? If you're committed to something and you see the vision for it, the advice I would have is listen to what you're hearing You'll start to understand, you'll start to see commonalities from the investors you're talking to. And over time, you'll start to understand what the common things they're looking for. Having a customer who's really excited about what you're doing, even generating some revenue, can be a great thing. But in the long run, it can hurt you. Once you start generating revenue, once your customers are starting to pay for your products, all of a sudden, you've sort of set the bottom or the top of what kind of revenue you're able to generate from your products. And that can dictate a little bit of what you can expect in the future.
Yeah, we had the founder from Pattern Jam, Alan. And she went through the Boom Startup Program, the Accelerator Program here, and she came to talk to me when she was halfway through it, and she was thinking about how to monetize. She has several thousand users of her website. And that was the quandary, right? Is, you know, right now people think a fourth of your users are going to sign up. If you choose to monetize before you raise your seed round, now everybody knows. Maybe the number is only 2%. And now all of a sudden that's going to impact things. So in some ways, the vision can be more powerful than small numbers early on, which can be very misleading. In your case, what do you think was the inflection point where it went from being hard to raise money to having investors court you?
So honestly, it was a combination of network and customer acquisition. So once we realized that we had customers on board, Park City, our most notable customer, once we did a citywide deployment in Park City, we had quite a bit of interest. We had investors asking to put in more money, investors who were asking when they could invest, and quite a bit of interest from in and around the state. So I think that's really key, is once you really hit your stride a little bit, once you're starting to figure out what you're doing, once your customer's starting to say, yeah, I get the vision, I understand what you're doing now, this is helpful to me, and here's why. When they start taking the lead, when your customer is able to, on their own, go out and tell people how great your product is, or sell it for you, or talk to your investors and tell them what they love about it and why they'd be willing to pay for it. It's a magical moment for you as the founder of a company, for your team, but also for investors, because they start to see the
people are buying into your vision. I mean, that's got to be a very exciting thing. How about building your team day one? I mean, that's a really hard thing to do. You're a full-time student, not just an MBA student, but also a full-time law student, very busy schedule. How were you, and you had a vision, but you're not a technology guy. You don't code. You're not a hardware IT guy. This is a technology company. Who were your first team members, and how did you recruit them?
So the hardest thing I do every day is managing my team, building my team, and defining the culture of the team. And when I look back now, that was true then as it is now. Finding the key employees, the people who are going to differentiate you, make sure that you're a success, is the hardest thing you'll ever do as a founder. I reached out to my personal network. I was fortunate to have our CTO, Patrick Brown, a longtime friend of mine, come on board. Couldn't have worked out better. He was leaving his current position in another company the same time that we were ready to grow the company a little bit more. And then it's just finding great people. What I've learned is, it's not about the skill set necessarily. I mean, you've got to make sure that people can code and do the things you need them to do. But if you find really good people, people who are motivated and excited, people who work to the bone and get your vision, get behind your vision, those people will figure out what they need to figure out to get the job done. And those are the kinds of people you need to hire.
And it's a very challenging situation. So kudos to you. That's hard to do. I think it's one of the biggest challenges for a startup non-technical founder is convincing somebody to join your team. What do you think it was about Blinksy, about your vision, that made Patrick say, I want to join, I want to do what, I want to be part of your team? Because he had just left his company, but I bet he had half a dozen, if not a dozen, other opportunities out there.
Absolutely. And Blinksy's really fortunate to have brought Patrick on when we did. One of a kind guy, very, very talented, and could easily have gotten 6-7 times the salary we offered him as somewhere else. But for technology people, it's interesting. They care about building something really cool. The money matters a little bit, and if they're comfortable in making what they're used to making or close to that, what they really care about is that they're doing something impactful and they love what they're doing. So that's what you're really selling, is the vision of what the company is now and will be that someone can get behind. And for us, it was, do you want to be the chief architect of the next Google? Do you want to be the chief architect of the next big thing? You can define, write, and develop the system, and as we grow, hire a team to build out your vision of what the technology looks like.
So let's talk about how Blinksy becomes the next big thing, because what you've described is a very attractive business, but it's not the next big thing. And you and I, because I'm an investor, we've chatted about the value of the data, which is really exciting. I believe you shared with me you've gotten over a billion data points in the year that you've been doing this. What is that data and why is it so valuable?
Yeah, as of this morning, we reached 4 billion rows of data and growing at an astonishing rate. The data is really, really valuable in the sense that it helps both cities understand the habits and trends of people in and around their communities for things like traffic light synchronization or economic development purposes. But just as important is the fact that local businesses can now understand the same demographic information through Blinksee. That is, where was my customer coming from before they came to my store? Where did they go after? Why didn't they come back? Did the ad that we placed in the newspaper actually drive them there? Did the billboard advertising that changed drive them there? How does weather affect that? How do all of these metrics affect the habits and trends of people as they go about their lives? And why is that useful? How does that make our business better? How does that drive more tax revenue for the city? How does that make traffic synchronization and transit better in a city? How does the entire community benefit through Blinksee's data? And that's really the vision of what we're doing. It's using data and analytics to make the world a better place.
Yeah, that is a big vision, and I should share. My wife, who you know, Linda Wells, who used to be involved in the MBA program at the University of Utah, she has a friend, Mike Cassidy, who's a very senior executive at Google. He's running the Google Loon project, which is bringing 3G data to emerging markets that don't have data. And he was here skiing in Utah. He was nice enough to give us 20 minutes of his time. You and I sat down and chatted with him. And when you gave him your five-minute pitch, his very first response was, we should just buy you, right? I mean, it's very big, and I think it's obvious when you bring in the data and the value of that data. So very exciting what's in front of you. I want to go back to kind of that first 6 months and when we first met where, you know, you were struggling to put everything together. It very easily could have unraveled. I was very impressed how you navigated all that. What was it that kept you going and kept you committed during that period of time?
I think a lot of it's dictated by your personality. I have a bit of an obsessive personality type, and I didn't want to see this fail, period. I really liked the mission and the value proposition, especially when I started the company, thinking about how to make traffic lights green when I approached them. It was important to me personally, but we also started to see a really cool opportunity. As we started to talk to people in the space, we started to understand that this industry is ripe for disruption, right? The same way companies like Uber have come in and disrupted taxi cabs and Google has come in and disrupted marketing, we see an opportunity in a way to change the way the world works. And it was that excitement. I had offers to go to other companies and make a ton of money, but why do that if I can build something really cool and exciting? It takes a certain personality type to be an entrepreneur. And you've got to be relentlessly willing to pursue your crazy idea. And even when people tell you, no, it's not going to work, laugh it off and figure out a better way to do it.
I'm curious because you come across as very confident. And one of the things I love about entrepreneurship is just the core changes it makes to a person. I mean, the Mark Pittman that's sitting in front of me today is a much stronger, confident person than the Mark Pittman that I first met. I think a lot of them, we see that over and over with entrepreneurs. And I tell folks when they're going through these difficult times, if you knew the outcome, you'd be willing to put in the effort. If you knew, hey, 5 years from now, this is going to be a success, you would do everything you needed to do to make that happen if you knew the outcome. The challenge with entrepreneurship, unlike school, right? You had succeeded at a very high level at school. You can kind of connect the dots and you know the outcome. When you were looking at the likelihood of Blinksee succeeding in the depths where it was difficult, where you didn't have any money, the credit cards were maxed out, the student loans were maxed out, that's how I ended up investing. You needed to raise money to pay Patrick's salary. In the depths of those moments, what were you thinking the likelihood of Blinksee's success was? Did you always think we're going to make it?
Yeah, so once you have bought into the vision, you have to keep buying into the vision. It's true what you say, Doug. You have to be very confident about what you're doing. Otherwise, it doesn't work for you and it doesn't work for them. If you're not committed to the success of your company, why should someone else, right? So the difficult part for me was I didn't have much to lose. This is the most phenomenal thing about the University of Utah, especially the LaSonde Entrepreneurship Institute, is that they give you the resources and the background that you need to succeed. It's just up to you to make that happen. And so I got some grant funding from the university. I got all the mentorship and support that I needed. The University of Utah was even willing to be our first customer. When all of that came together, we realized that this was a lot more than what we had set out to do, that I was already in school. The worst case scenario, we do this for 6 months and the rug gets pulled out from underneath us and we've got to go find something else to do, which is the great thing about starting a company while you're in school, right? There's always that opportunity, but it's a risk. And once you've bought into your vision, you've got to keep buying into your vision a little bit. It's a little bit about sipping your own Kool-Aid. And now
it's graduation, and now you're turning down real job offers, and it's different.
Yeah, that part's a little more difficult. We were fortunate to have raised more money before I graduated, so I did actually have a salary upon graduating. And
weeks before you graduated,
weeks.
Though.
You're right. It was a very, very short turnaround time. I didn't really have many contingency plans. I had poured my heart and soul into the company. I mean, more than 40 hours a week in the last final months there, even still being in school. And it was a struggle to balance all of those things. But it's kind of true that when you know, you know. And we know that Blinksy's going to be a success. And it made it easy to make the decision.
Well, that's a great note for us to wrap up on. You know Blinksy's going to be a success. I know Blinksy's going to be a success. And let's wait for the whole world to catch up with that and see what Blinksy becomes. Very exciting. Mark, thanks for joining us today on the Bottom Line's Startup Spotlight.
Thanks, Doug.
Our guest this morning has been Mark Pittman, the founder of Blinksy. You can hear my entire interview with Mark on our website, kcpw.org. Today's show was recorded on the KCPW studios on Library Square and produced by Ross Chambliss. Thanks, Ross. You do a great job. You can tweet me at Savvy Wells or at KCPW Bottom Line. I'm Doug Wells. Join us next week on The Bottom Line.